Hello and welcome to the Green Room at Furnitubes. I'm your host, Catherine Barrett, and we're here every month with a new episode. Join us for industry musings, interviews, and discussions exploring all things landscape architecture, street furniture, and urban design. Hi, and welcome to the Green Room. I am joined today by Kim Morrish, the driving force behind the acquisition and growth of UK-based grounds maintenance company Ground Control. I've known Kim for a while, and she has long been an advocate for our environment and is here to talk to us today about Ground Control's journey to carbon neutral in 2020 and key sustainability initiatives that she and her team have launched in the last few years. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Hi, Catherine. It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
Now, tell me a little bit about Ground Control, more about what you guys do.
The business has been trading for almost 50 years, and we deliver a diverse range of landscape services along with winter maintenance, design, and landscape construction. And we focus on diverse commercial property portfolios. On top of that, we provide environmental consultancy, and we're installing electric vehicle chargers for green fleets. So these are big growth areas for us to serve our existing and new customers.
In terms of those growth areas and the various businesses, you're bound together by some pretty strong values. So what are the values that shape Ground Control? And I know they've been really important to the journey and the way that Ground Control's evolved or been shaped. And why is sustainability and particularly biodiversity so important to the business and to you?
When we acquired Ground Control in 2004, we pivoted straight away from sort of an autocratic one entrepreneur owner who had scaled it and was looking to retire to very team approached. Every employee was a shareholder. The directors mortgaged their homes to invest alongside us. So from the very beginning, we put people at the center. We cared very deeply about the people. How are we developing them and engaging them and retaining them? And then over a few years, we focused as much on planet. And so we said we put the people and planet at the center of everything we do. Big values for us, human nature, taking responsibility for the vitality of our environment. And we nurture spaces that bring people, places, and planet together. We empower people to create places that are fit for the future. So that's our people on the ground and in the back office, really having them feel a sense of ownership for what they can do to impact nature and the experience people and customers have on our sites. And then we have a vision to leave the world a little bit better than we found it.
How did you come to this point? Because you're so people focused and led, have they been a key part of what you do now and what your values are?
I think like attracts like. From the very beginning, we bought a business. The values were aligned, just great customer service and delivery, you know, hard work, helping others. That was a business that we were so fortunate to acquire. And then we kind of doubled down on the things that mattered to us. And as a result, you attract the people that you want to attract when you're holding true to values. And so for 18 and a half years now, it's just a virtuous circle of we attract really good people with values alignment. We're constantly reinforcing values and then rewarding things, the right values and behaviors that support what we care about. And then they're helping us attract more people. And it's fantastic. The evolution on the planet piece of this has been probably the most interesting because it has been an evolution. We didn't start off saying we want to be a force for good in nature. We started off cutting grass. We bought a business that cut a lot of grass. And over time, we saw the potential for impact by doing things differently. And in 2008, during that big economic slowdown, we started talking to customers about, don't cut everything down. What if we start working with you to create areas for biodiversity, for pollinators in parts of your land that aren't customer facing? And then we were looking at designing landscape schemes for drought-tolerant species. So those things were happening as we went, and we bought our first electric hybrid vehicles then. In 2009, repositioned the business on the back of these smaller evolutions. Our tagline was caring for our environment. We just got really purposeful about that aspect of it.
So in these small interventions, which have accumulated sort of since 2008, 2009, and have grown, and you've obviously moved, and customers of yours have moved along as well, was there a particular point where the small interventions became more significant? And is there a change now in terms of how people see the service that you provide in terms of how they measure what they're looking for from a provider like Ground Control?
That's a great question. You know, what's the expression? Slowly and then suddenly all at once. It was, you know, lots of small interventions on electric fleet and then into green energy for all of our facilities and recycling campaigns. And then we got a contract with Highways England for creating pollinator pathways up in Cumbria. So exciting. So instead of mowing all the verges, creating these pathways for bees and insects to protect them, provide a habitat that was desperately needed. So some of the evolutions were driven by our people. Some of the evolutions were opportunities with customers that were tremendously exciting for us. And then also very heavy shaping by Tony Juniper, who's now the chair of Natural England, the Wildlife Trust, the Woodland Trust Forestry Commission, and then these like-minded people that we attract. Like, you're out thinking of something and committed to something, and you just bump into people that are very much like you. So there's a whole network of entrepreneurs and academics who we just cross-pollinate our projects. Like, what are you doing on this? What are you doing on this? And a lot of it's been quite informal. In 2018, we dedicated about 10 hectares on our farm to create a woodland, native hardwood woodland, for carbon sequestration. And it was a bit of a test. We partnered with a customer and the Forestry Commission, and it got a lot of people involved, and it was super exciting. And that was the test model to then in 2019 when we launched the Evergreen Fund. A portion of that was around woodland creation and tree planting, specifically for carbon reduction.
And is this very much for Ground Control, or were you offering this for customers to do as well?
So for 2019, when I presented this for the board, it was kind of a legacy. You know, we've had a really long run in Ground Control, and I was starting to do other things. And what would I really want to leave as a legacy? You know, we're aligned on creating something perpetually. So the idea of a fund, an evergreen fund, where we'd put 5% of profits into a facility that could do green investing in woodland creation, and then we'd figure out to make it commercial enough that the funds were coming back in and we could continue to reinvest. And that this concept around evergreen, that's what we called it, that specifically, it's not a foundation. It's an investment fund with patient capital. It's not about maximizing returns. It's about getting capital to really innovative green technological solutions. And then we had an earmark within that for tree planting.
I see.
So we launched that in 2019. And a few months into it, COVID hit. And through that time, we were talking to our partners, our customers, who have huge banks of land. If we have, we maintain 55,000 sites throughout the UK, and we're saying, we'd love to plant some of our trees on your land. And it was a more difficult proposition than we had imagined. So they were committed to partnering with us, but not necessarily donating land or dedicating land for it. 9 months into scratching our heads, because it was harder than we thought it was going to be, we bought 300 acres.
Right.
We just bought our own land, yep. Degraded farmland in Essex. And I think one is to show commercially, with evidence-based, science-based approach to measuring revenue around doing the right thing for nature. So if you're getting carbon credits or biodiversity credits, grants from the Forestry Commission, there's a business model here for caring for land, for nature, instead of using land for commercial purposes. So we bought it to show that. And so we're partnering with some fantastic companies, tech companies, all the Wildlife and Woodland Trusts and Forestry Commission, along with our customers, to figure it out. You know, it's brand new stuff. We have a lot of like-minded individuals who are also working on this. But it's extraordinary to me how commercial that purchase is turning out to be. And so we're looking to buy more land. The other thing, we're investing in green technology. I think our employees like that. Some of our customers really like that. We're getting tremendous emotional traction. People feel deeply connected to something they can touch. And so this land has been very important for our company, for our employees to see and touch and understand what we're doing versus some other company that's investing in green technology.
Yeah, and feeling that there's something physical that's actually contributing to the health of the environment.
Exactly. We're a land-based company, and you can see all the hedgerows that are going to be going up, the woodland creation, pond and hedgerow restoration. It's something that's perpetual. You're going to be able to measure increases in biodiversity. You're going to be able to measure carbon sequestration from the woodlands we're creating.
You'll use this as really a research lab almost of what can be done, and then use that knowledge to either advise customers or implement it on their behalf. You're using this as a research to then network out to improve the land of many, many organizations, hopefully. Is that right?
Catherine, that's exactly right. It's something that we can really control as evidence-based proof. You know, we've made the investment. We're not trying to say you should do this.
Experiment on your time.
We're not saying you should do this. We're doing it. And so what we want to do through collaboration, there's a lot of wonderful people and organizations involved with this initiative. Through collaboration, this is what we can now demonstrate. And how can we help you achieve your own goals on creating networks for nature conservation? And that is truly exciting, because one plot of 300 acres, or maybe we end up with 3 or 5 or 10, is not going to tip the scales. But pieces of 55,000 commercial sites.
Wow. Yeah, it's incredible. And you're proving the case for it in a small little Petri dish, basically.
Yes, and that's
our hub.
That will
then be replicated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in your hub. And you've already got this base of fantastic customers that you can advise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the impact of that is huge.
Potentially it is. And again, it's been such a call to arms. It's the flag that's flying over our organization on employee engagement. And again, attracting great talent that I'm not convinced we would have been able to attract without walking the walk of our values, right? Like the things that we say we care about, it's such tangible demonstration, not only the 5% of profits, but this investment in biodiversity preservation.
And it's clearly resonating and engaging with your employees. Is it resonating with your customers? And is it resonating more? Do you feel like there's a shift in attitude towards what needs to be done in terms of our environment from your customer base?
Completely. So for years of leading business development, we only competed on price. Our customers called it best value for money, but we only won work where we were the lowest price for years. And then it was a bit more of best value for money, and there were other criteria. The last pitch I did, which was in 2020 to a big property management company, the only thing we talked about was alignment of values, not value for money. So our price was competitive, but not by any stretch of the imagination the lowest. But the service delivery expertise that we have, you know, all the training history and the client retention certainly factored in. But the only thing in the final round of pitches we talked about and they wanted to hear about was alignment of values. And that to me was a huge mind shift in the environment where we're operating. So we've had two big events here for green gains, where, I mean, right on the back of the last COVID lockdown, we had 100 customers here to talk about these initiatives. You know, had the tent and the platform and the coffee in exchange and cross-pollination of ideas that are working all over the place.
So they're talking about their initiatives and sharing ideas and best practices with each
yes.
other.
And what's so fantastic to see is that we're small and nimble. It's SME. We can look at what the government directives are, what they're saying, we want you to do this. We can look at our big customers saying their supply chains are going to need to do this. The world is moving commercially in a way that you're going to have to be more compliant. And we are touching on the ground. Instead of doing business as usual, you can do business as usual where you absolutely have to for customer-facing parts or for health and safety, but where you don't have to operate in the same way. How can you operate for nature along with everything else that affects potentially trading and operations? And so just really uniquely positioned to help with that and have our ecologists go in and do all the advisory work and consultation work.
Do you see that actually as an additional part of the work that Ground Control will do? It'll be another advisory piece.
So it is currently a really important part of the work that we do and growing dramatically. And on the back of our July Green Gains 2 event, where you're on a runway for a really long time and you start to wonder how much longer is the runway. In July, we had liftoff. So the year before...
Wow. What did, and tell me what that was. What was the liftoff? What was the liftoff?
That was the moment that you could feel it in the air. You could feel it in the questions and the conversations that happened at that event, that people saw the opportunity to do things differently as a benefit for nature that also has so many positive benefits for their firms.
Right.
So commercial benefits, but the staff engagement, their ability to compete for contracts. You know, it's important that you are a more conscientious corporate citizen.
Yeah.
But to show this is what you're gaining as well. And the models that were presented from Severn Trent Water putting together 2022 tiny forests and to commensurate.
To celebrate.
to celebrate the Commonwealth Games. So Severn Trent Water was one of our speakers, explained all their environmental initiatives. They are just cutting edge. And then all the other water utility companies who were present started to imagine what they could be doing. So many of them are already been doing this. They've been leading on environmental initiatives for 20 years.
Yep.
But now they're thinking, you know, models of land use designed for Lower Thames Crossing, the Highways Agency.
Yep.
Huge. It's going to be the biggest infrastructure project going in, and how they're building bridges for nature, how they're putting all these sound barriers in to protect nature. The sensitivity. Yeah. Yes.
So it's almost like the snowball's gathered so much momentum that now there's so many ideas coming in. I guess you just saw loads and loads of big light bulbs, not just small light bulbs, but big light bulbs going off in July.
On the back of that event, we had 15 opportunities. So you could brutally call them like we got 15 new contracts, but we had 15 opportunities to go in and do consultancy projects around nature. And this is this, gosh, extraordinary. And the year before, maybe we had a couple things happen. And that just in the past month and a half, what's come in with real commitment from our customers.
But the exciting thing for me about that is that's new business for you, which is great, but it's new business that's benefiting the environment. You're doubling the impact of those conversations because you're leading the conversation in terms of what people are doing, which is incredible.
Exactly. It's new business around something that to date been a much harder scope to sell.
Right.
Again, we're on the runway rumbling along for a really long time. And now the demand is there with real enthusiasm.
It's caught up with you. Well,
now we got to catch up with the demand. You know, people care. They just, the world's changed. COVID really helped change that a lot as well. People want to work places where they're aligned with their values. People have a whole different connection with nature after being locked up inside. And the science behind it, what the impact of nature's decline and biodiversity's decline is having on everything in the world, from agricultural production to the ability to innovate with pharmaceuticals to cure disease, for our own mental health and well-being, for the quality of the air we breathe, for species that are so close to being extinct. Like, you know, it's so important that we recognize it has a huge impact on everybody. And so what everybody do to make small contributions and then hopefully slowly, and then quickly, suddenly, and huge.
Well, also the responsibility as business owners, whether it's public, private, small, large, we actually have a massive responsibility, and it's kind of in our hands, really, as decision makers to do the right thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
I have one more question because we've talked about the Wildfell Project and we've talked about Green Gains Live, two really brilliant initiatives. And you've mentioned the Evergreen Fund. So this is very green tech focused, is that right?
It's all green tech. Carbon reducing technologies is where the focus is.
Right. Tell us about some of the things that you've invested in or that you're excited about.
Yes, well, I've been super excited. The latest one that we're disclosing on is a soft loan to the Wildlife Trust to purchase land for rewilding. So that's a different one. It's a very different one, and it's just some patient capital for them to get a land purchase over the line. There's some fabulous technologies around smart thermostats and social housing to reduce energy consumption and waste, but also help social housing associations understand what's going on inside the individual units with damp or gas leaks. Has somebody not turned on a light or a boiler in 3 weeks? So it's a management tool that has a big impact on the quality of housing stock for the people that live there, but also cost reducing and carbon reducing. That's called Switchy. And in the year and a half since we invested, the valuation of that business has doubled. They just brought in a big institutional round. And so, you know, you only realize gains when you sell something, but it's exciting to see how well they've done to be able to attract now proper institutional finance versus angel finance. There's X-Lynx and X-Lynx CC. It's solar energy from North Africa coming back to the UK through undersea cables. This technology already exists. It's crisscrossing all over the place, but this will be the longest undersea cable installation and really plentiful clean supplies of energy. We've made investments in both those businesses. That's really exciting. And then carbon reduced. They're like machines that suck carbon out of the air. And radiators that are underground that draw heat from the Earth's core and then produce it in these tiny micro energy factories. So some really super futuristic stuff, and then stuff that's just small innovations on what the world already has, but with a focus on carbon reduction.
Yes, it's patient capital and it's investment, but it's also a way of just seeing what else is, understanding and being very close to new innovations and what's happening, and opening your mind to new ways of looking at things. And you never know what you could then use with your customer base or tell people about.
Exactly.
I can see that the Evergreen Fund brings you also a lot of huge personal satisfaction.
And it does. And one of the investments I didn't mention, CSX, it's a new technology for more accurately measuring carbon sequestration and biodiversity net gains. And so now that's a very time-consuming, labor-intensive, and not completely accurate methodologies used, like mapping trees. And this using drone technology and artificial intelligence,
yep,
they're putting together much more accurate measurements. And the measurement of the biodiversity gains is such a new science. And so they came to us for an investment, but we said, hey, partner with us up at the Wildfell, like start measuring. So last year they started measuring here on the woodland creation we put in 2019.
Right.
It's 3 years on.
Yes.
And the trees are huge. It's so incredible to see it now. Huge compared to the teeny whips that we put in the ground originally. And there's 23,000 trees now. It's just extraordinary. So they did their initial benchmark measurements here. And then at the Wildfell, where we're just starting, we will just start planting trees this season. And so they're doing the baseline measurements, and then they're going to be monitoring us over time. So not only are we partnering with them, we've made an investment with them as a shareholder, as a show of support. And that is really fun. That's true partnership.
That's true partnership. Exactly. You're completely bound together. What would be, I mean, I think this is a great way to kind of sum up, if you can sum up this huge topic, but in terms of how do you measure the impact of the work that you're doing? You know, there's so many facets, and I can see that you're looking at every single way that you can impact and make your impact on the Earth's survival, really, if we put it in a big context. What to you would be, if you had to put a number or a percentage, you know, what would be a way of saying that we've done a good job?
That is such an important question, because what are we trying to achieve here? There is lots to talk about, but how are we measuring it? So as a percentage of revenue, as a percentage of the number of projects, so we could have a 5 million pound contract doing something, or we can have a 5,000 pound consultancy project where we're advising. So we want to make sure we don't get lost in the numbers because we do such big infrastructure projects. So we'll look at number of projects, the additionality of both.
Yep.
What is new because of our initiatives? If we say this is our focus, what is existing now in our portfolio of projects and services that didn't exist before? And are these growing and changing things? So where we can control the situation, like at Wildfell, we'll measure carbon sequestration and biodiversity net gains. Where we can't accurately measure, we are going to provide some guesstimates, probably say, well, we've helped plant 100,000 trees for Tesco, and we don't have a contract with CSX, doesn't have a contract to measure it for say. So we guess on that, the old-fashioned way of measuring carbon. With this type of tree, this density, this age of tree, this is probably what's happening. And the commerciality of it is probably as important. At Wildfell, for the $2 million property purchase cost, we already have funds that exceed that for the projects that are good for nature. So investment, so somebody can take the carbon credits. So on the books, it's already paid for itself. We had a customer call in last week who offered more than four times the value of the land acquisition if they could measure or take the biodiversity credits, because they need to offset their environmental impact with an additionality of new biodiversity credits. So what a game changer. Now, we've already made commitments for a bunch of stuff that we're doing on that land, but it gives us tremendous confidence, like, let's go buy some more land straight away. So that's how we're going to be measuring it. The demand for what we're doing, and is it able to pay for itself? It's not about maximizing profits, but are we able to pay for the initiatives? Yes.
Well, and also, really, everything that you're learning can be implemented. And that's also another, you know, everything that you're learning can then be tenfold, 20-fold applied somewhere else.
Because if we can show the commerciality that it's not a loss-making activity to do things for nature, that you can at least break even, if not have this kind of be a net positive for not only all the positive impacts for the world and for your staff and for customer acquisition, but positive impact in terms of you didn't lose money, you maybe even gained something on your bottom line. That's how you'll know you're successful. Right now, currently, nature, environmental degradation is not priced into many things.
Yep.
And so once you start pricing in reverse of destruction, once you start pricing in environmental gains, people will start thinking about the way they operate their businesses very differently.
And so what advice for people listening, and we have a lot of landscape architects, a lot of contractors listening to this podcast, is it that we should all have woodland? What would be the best way that we can help on our country's and our world's biodiversity journey?
That's a complex question with a raft of answers, but it's a hybrid. It's not just plant a tree. That's not end of the equation. It's create habitats where nature can thrive and protect habitats where nature can thrive. So some trees host hundreds and hundreds of species of insects and birds, and some don't. You know, a golf course is not very hospitable for nature, but a wild meadow is. And so it's the mix of things. Hedgerows are so rich for biodiversity. The pollinators, certain trees, getting the mix of that. Everybody needs water, making sure that there are ponds and access to water that wildlife can continue to benefit from. And so it's looking at the whole range of things that you can and should do. And that starts in your own small garden. If you have a garden, thinking about portions that you can dedicate for all other species, not just where you can kick a football or have a picnic. And you start there. So for landscape architects, one of our fabulous landscape architects gave me the playbook that we've done for one of our housing contractors. We do a lot of new housing garden installation. This is best practice for biodiversity. It's a guide to these are the types of species you want to use. This is how much hard infrastructure. So avoiding the block paving, avoiding things where there's no permeation for water and drought tolerant. And what does it need? Constant maintenance. So really rethinking how we're designing our external space from the beginning, because we used to design out future maintenance problems. And now we're trying to design in positive environments for biodiversity to thrive.
Kim, we like to ask a quick fire question at the end. And it's really about, if you could put a bench anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
I grew up in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, and there's something that is awe-inspiring about standing or sitting in a place that, as far as the eye can see, is uninterrupted vistas of woodland. And there's so few places in the world that you can find that. For people to see what it is, its majesty, it's just tremendous. All the science they've done around how positive it is for mental health to be in nature, you know, hugging trees. There's actually a science behind what you gain from hugging trees. So how do you bring people without having a negative environmental impact into these places? Because I think if you saw what's possible, if there hadn't been a couple centuries of human destruction of the landscape, if you saw, I think Britain used to be covered in woods. And if you fly in and out of here, you only see quilts of agricultural land. It's green concrete. So how do you change the way people think about land? You'd have to inspire them. You'd have to make them see somewhere where it's been lost. And then along with that inspiration to just, gosh, it just feels good. If everybody could get to the woods, we'd all feel a lot better.
Yeah, we'd feel a lot better.
That was a tough question.
Thank you, Kim. I love that. That's an incredible image to end on.